He says, how many people who have never fasted, and that God accept them as if they have fasted. Everything depends upon our motives and upon our intentions. And once the heart is pure, the distance between you and Baha'u'llah then is very short. Once the heart is pure, there is no distance. And someone was saying before we broke up for lunch, and I think I want to clarify this point. When we talked about we have to teach the faith every day. True. And this person thought that you must tell about the faith every day to somebody. No. You might go for a month every day out and you won't find anybody to teach. But the very fact that your motive is to teach, that is acceptable to God. You go out with the intention of teaching. You go, you make the effort. Maybe for a month you're looking at the person who is your neighbor every month, every day, and you pray for him. That is in the steps in the right direction. We must not become rigidly thinking in that way, that you must talk about the faith to someone today. If you don't know it, you have failed. On the contrary, once we move, once the heart is moved that you want to do something for Baha'u'llah, and you want to give an hour for him, and you go out, and even if it's like that woman who went there every day, sat there, said nothing. Now that was marvelous. That she did her work. And I think we should do the same thing. That the heart must be right, the motive must be right. Abdul Baha in one of his talks has said that if a person has, say for instance, a person is very poor, but his heart wants and begs God to give him money so that he could build a house of worship. He says, oh God, I love to build a house of worship. If I had money, I would pay all the costs of building a house of worship for God. Abdu'l-Bahá says, this poor man, even if he doesn't get the money to build a house of worship, God will accept from him as if he has built a house of worship because his intentions are pure. This is what God goes by. And then he says, should he ever, God give him the money and build a house of worship? Well, that's very meritorious now. Imagine, he builds it. But there is a possibility, he said, that God will not accept it from him as much as in the former case. Because he might, one day say, I built this. And then that's finished. You bring I into it, it'll be finished. Really and truly. There is no room for I in the faith. Remember this also. The faith does not harbor egotistical personality. It is, and this is why the authority is left in the hands of institutions of the faith. The elected institutions of the faith have the authority. The local assembly has an authority to decide, to make a decision. No one else has the right to make a decision or to give. Now I can mention this to you in here, for example, that we have, as you know, in the faith, two types of institutions, the elected and the appointed institutions. The authority is with the elected institutions of the faith. The other institutions of the faith, which is that of the counselors and the board members and so forth, and the assistants, they have no authority. They have a sacred function, but no authority. The authority lists with the institutions of the faith, and that we all will obey that authority. So you see, individuals are cut off here. And this is one of the blessings which enables us all to vie with each other in servitude. In servitude. Abdu'l-Bahá says that it is not possible to serve God because God is exalted above our service. He says if you want to serve God, you will have to serve the friends of God, the beloved of God, the friends, the believers. And this is, I think, this is why Abdu'l-Bahá says, this is the thing which I feel is the most beautiful thing he has said for all of us as a guide, as a lesson. He says, make me as a dust in the pathway of thy loved ones. And the loved ones of God is the person who may not have any knowledge, may not have any understanding of the faith as much as you have or I have, but he is the loved ones of God. just the believer who says, I believe, and he or she becomes a Baha'i and throws herself into the cause of God. And as I said this morning, we look into each other's faces and we see a beautiful sign of Baha'u'llah, and that is the loved ones of God. So friends, these points that are very important in teaching. Now, I'm not going to talk any much more about teaching and how to teach the faith and how important it is. You all know this. But I would say that if you wanted to forget everything that I have said this weekend, you can forget all of these things that I have said. Remember one thing. No, remember two things. Or three things, huh? Two or three things. Four things. One thing is, remember this. We must always draw nearer to Baha'u'llah, closer to him. Bring him with us in everything we do. Turn to him with a pure heart. And if we can't do it, I think the first step to it is to read the writings in the morning and in the evening. And then serve the faith. Just don't read it and sit there, but then serve, then go out, then do something. Give an hour to Baha'u'llah. And then things will change. Things will change. So, talking about teaching again, I wanted to mention another aspect. Teaching, so you can see the difference which exists between teaching and proclamation of the faith, which are really for different purposes. The proclamation of the faith is designed to bring the faith into the notice of the public and give it prestige. Teaching is to confirm people. Personal teaching is to confirm people for the purpose of confirmation. Although both of them help people to recognize Baha'u'llah, but to carry them out, there are two different functions. And so where is the place for teaching? Let us find out. Where is the place for teaching for a believer? The place for teaching is in your hometown, because that's where you can make friends. If you want to proclaim the faith, well, you might travel around. You can go here and there, but you cannot teach there, really. If you want to teach, you have to spend time to make friends with your workmates, with your neighbors, with your fellow beings, human beings in the town, that you come in touch with them. And so, the place to teach the faith is in your own town. But unfortunately, again, there is another, misconception, if you like to say, that some people I know in Europe think that if they want to teach the faith, they have to leave their town and go to another town, and they call it travel teaching. Now, it's all right. Don't take it that I'm saying against travel teaching. It's really, in travel teaching, you can do something. You can help the believers in that locality. You can go there into the streets in that town and tell the people and give the message to the people. You can give the message. In travel teaching, you can give the message of Baha'u'llah to people. But it is not easy to teach them, because you don't know them. You are not having a home there to attract them to yourself. Also, you must remember, it's possible, of course, it's possible, that you come across a person straightforward. You must also remember this, who is so open, who wants to know about the faith. There you don't have to wait to make friends with him. He's already friends with you. He says, tell me about the faith. I want to know about it. Then you invite him to your home. And then you don't rush into telling him everything. Just find out what he believes in. Let him say it. This is very important. Let him say things. Baha'u'llah once said that, look at the master. He is an example, he said. When somebody comes to him, the master first listens to him. And he listens with such genuine interest that the person thinks that Abdul Baha is learning from him an awful lot. And he says, he lets him say a lot of things. And at the end of it, he then says something to him in a way that the person realizes that he is not trying to argue with him. Because if a person knows that you are trying to establish in a conversation the ascendancy of your argument, if he ever thinks that you are trying to establish that you are right, and he says something and you say, no, it's like this, and he keeps on saying something and you keep on, as I said, it's like a football match, then this becomes an argument. Then there is a barrier already. Baha'u'llah says we must not build barriers when we are teaching the faith. If ever the person thinks that you want to establish the fact that you are right, then he is going to have a psychological barrier there. He won't come to hear you. And even whatever you say, it goes over his head. He's not responsive. And he says, look at the master. He listens. He listens with such genuine care. And then, when his turn comes, he just says one or two little things in such a way that the person becomes affected by it. And he says, yes, this is a different point of view. And he does not rebel against it. There is no barriers. I have seen that in some gatherings when people are teaching, I've seen many people who are in firesides or public meetings, they teach the faith. And all they are interested to do, quite frankly, now I'm not criticizing anybody, but I think I've seen this, that all they're trying to do is to pour out their knowledge and impress the person with all the things they know and all the terminologies they know to use, you know. And they pour out so much from beginning to the end. It speaks about an hour maybe or two, pouring out every knowledge he has. Well, this is, I think, not going to impress people. People will take it, may go home, and they may not come to you. But to attract somebody is when you give him the message with a spirit of humility. Very important, with a spirit of humility. Again, remember, when Baha'u'llah is with you, you can do it. But if you are alone, you can't do it. If you don't take Baha'u'llah with you, then you are going to become yourself and project yourself and your knowledge and all the rest of it. But when he is with you, one becomes very humble. Now, teaching is very important and time is very short for us, really. I mention this because the world conditions will make it imperative for us that we should now really go out and teach. Now, I believe that if every Baha'i takes to heart this suggestion that I made in here to you, that 1 hour a day you give to Baha'u'llah, in your own ways, devise your own ways. And personal teaching need not be done alone. You can do, two or three of you can gang together and teach. Really? Because often when you are two or three together, you can help. Somebody can open his home, somebody can make a cup of tea, somebody can talk, work together. But there is no need to organize yourself through committees. But just go two or three people together and do this personal teaching. And I know that in this community, in your country, people are very open. They are not like Europeans who are so closed, reserved, who are having so many traditions that they must observe. This nation is very free. And you have some beautiful natives here, which I say, I'm sorry, I haven't been able to see them. I would have loved to see the natives, and I've seen one or two people here, and to me they have a tremendous station in the faith. They are the people who have been under pressure and oppression, and the faith is going to bring them up into the open and give them. They are like little flowers which have been growing in the shade. Now the sun of Baha'u'llah is going to shine on them and make them very beautiful people. And you have this crowd amongst yourselves. And I believe that if all of us together determine to give 1, 2, 3 hours a day to Baha'u'llah for teaching actively, go out and if nothing happens, come home again. You've done your job. Just like that woman. And then put your trust. Another thing you can do, you can test Baha'u'llah. Try him. See what he'll do to you. Really, put him on the spot. Put him on the spot. Baha'u'llah says, if you arise, I will assist you. Take his word on his face value. I have seen some people who have done this, and they come back and they said it works. Shoghi Effendi says, let those who doubt, let them try. Well, you try this. Bring Baha'u'llah with you. Do all the little things we said. Well, not the little things, but the important things. Those points that I've been talking since yesterday. Put them into practice for a while, and then do this. And the whole community will begin to become a new force. And I know that you are very blessed to have here marvelous institution of the counselors, a marvelous person who is here working with you, and the board members, who also are the embodiments of really detachment and love for you all. And what I've heard, you're so loved by the friends, that you have got everything to your advantage. When I said time is very short, I'll tell you a story here to just remind you of it. This is a Persian story again. And in order to tell you the story, I have to first bring you up to some ideas that you may not be familiar with. In Islam, it is said that on the day of judgment, they are going to have a big bridge set up. God will establish a huge bridge, long bridge, which is 70,000 miles or something long. And they say it is sharper than the sword, and it is hotter than fire, and it is thinner than a hair, and you have to walk on this. Why would you like that? And if you ever fall, if you've had it, you go down. Do you see? The fires will consume you right away. But if you could go the 70,000 miles on a journey like this, which is as sharp as the sword, as hot as the fire, and as thin as the hair, then you're all right. And they say that everyone must pass through this when the day comes. Well, the story begins in here that there was a man who was a holy man, and he was a marvelous person, and he used to teach the faith and live the life in accordance with the teachings of Islam. But next door to him was a man who was really the opposite. He was a man of vices and full of vices. And in Islam, it is a commandment that every individual must tell, if you are a good man, you must help the bad man to live a good life. You have a right to go and tell him, why do you live like this? Come and live like me, for instance. Well, of course, this is forbidden in the faith, you know that. It's a good thing, otherwise we would be talking to each other quite a lot. Now, this man one night had a dream. This holy man had a dream one night. He dreamt that the day of judgment had come, and this huge, long bridge was set, and people were being questioned, and then they put on this bridge, and they had to go. And this man, of course, being a holy man and have lived his life all in accordance with the teachings of God, he had no trouble. He said, I went on this bridge like anything, just like walking in the big highway. For him, there was nothing. He went on. And he found this is great. Oh, it's a marvelous thing. I've lived a good life now. I'm now getting the results. And I go on this bridge so easily, no problem. Suddenly, as he was going along, he saw somebody pull the back of his coat to stop him. And of course, you know what happens if on such a bridge so thin, if somebody pushes you a little bit, you're going to fall down. He looked back. He said, what are you doing to me? Who are you? And he saw it was his neighbor. You know, that bad neighbor, that bad man. He said, why do you do this to me? He said, where are you going? Oh, he said, I'm going to heaven. I've lived a good life. Oh, he said, that's what you think. I am not letting you go to heaven. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you help me when I was when you were my neighbor? Do you think I'm going to let you there or no? And he pulled him down, and the two of them went down, and the fires consumed them. That was the end of him. And he woke up. And he woke up and he realized the significance of this dream. And he, middle of night, he woke up his wife. And he said, this is what I've dreamt. I should have helped this man next door to me. I should have taught him the faith and helped him. And so he put on his coat and his clothes in the middle of night to go and tell him. His wife said, why are you doing it now? Just wait till tomorrow morning. He said, how do I know I'm going to live till tomorrow morning? I have no time. I must tell him. Now, I think this is really a very good story for us. And someone described hell being in the next life, when all our friends come to us and they tell us, why didn't you tell me? That'll be hell. And I feel that this is true. We must really arise and tell everyone who comes across, anyone we see, we must give him the message, really. And then we must attract them to ourselves to teach them. There are two stages, you see.